title of the seminar is How to Close Every Sale. The objectives of this seminar are basically twofold. Number one, we want to teach you how to close more sales. Number two, we want to teach you how to close more on every sale. Now, if you do that, a couple of great things are going to happen. Number one, the company is going to make more money because the sales will go up. And number two, you're probably going to make more money because your commissions will go up if you're on commission, and your job will be more secure, and everybody's going to have more fun. Plus, by effectively working with your customer and using the tools that you're going to learn in this little workshop, it will help to endear your customers to the business. They're going to feel better about doing business with you, and they're going to come back more often, and you're going to build a lot more solid customer base. So that's what we're going to accomplish, and hope we're going to learn how to do that here today. Now, the first thing I want to tell you is that there is a myth, and that is the myth of the natural-born salesperson. There is no such thing as a natural-born salesperson. Selling is a combination of two elements. It's a combination of, number one, attitude, and number two, skill. What we're going to be talking about here in this session is predominantly skill. There's been a lot of research done on this, and it's been found that a salesperson will only perform within about 10% of their self-esteem level. What that means is that if a salesperson believes they can only sell $10,000 a month, it's almost guaranteed that they're going to sell somewhere between $9,000 and $11,000. On the other hand, if the person believes they can sell $20,000 a month, they're probably going to do somewhere between $18,000 and $22,000. There is a myth of a natural-born salesperson. There ain't no such thing, guys. Selling is a learned thing. It's a learned process. And it really is a very simple process. Really, all that selling is a process of taking a prospect through a very simple psychological process. Call this the psychology of selling. Maybe it should more appropriately be called the psychology of buying, because that really is what it's all about. It's a simple four-step process that everybody goes through any time that they buy anything. Your job as a salesperson is to take them through those steps. And if you can take them through those steps, all four steps in order, they will buy every time. As long as they are a qualified prospect. Okay? So the first thing we want to talk about before we get into the actual steps are, what is a qualified prospect? Now, this is true no matter what it is you are selling here, folks. Qualified prospect. There are essentially three characteristics of a qualified prospect. One, two, three. What is the first characteristic? Okay. Now, affordability, we're going to classify here as being able to buy. For example, I had a client that was in the mobile home business. He had a lot of people, a lot of prospects who come in, and boy, they just love to buy a mobile home. I mean, they'd buy it right now, right today, if they could qualify. Okay, they couldn't afford it. Their income didn't meet the qualifications or whatever to be able to buy it. So no matter how much they, no matter how effective they were in taking them through the steps and doing everything else, there's no way they're going to buy because they're simply unable to buy. Okay, they don't have the financial ability or whatever. So that's the first thing. Okay, that's one thing that determines a qualified prospect. What else? Whatever it is that you have to offer must be something that will ultimately benefit them. In other words, they must be able to enjoy a benefit. What's the third thing? We talked about it yesterday.
They have to be able to buy.
They have to be the decision maker. They have to have their wife's approval. That's right. See, say if I walk into the furniture store, and man, I see this chair that I just love, okay? You know, I have the cash in my pocket, so I am able to buy that chair. And man, that chair would benefit me. I mean, I could sit down in that thing and I could watch the TV and I could be happy as a clam forever. But there is no way in this world that I could buy anything like that to go in our home without first having the approval of my wife. There's just no way. So I'm not the ultimate decision maker as far as that goes. Okay? So all three of those things have to be present. And so it's really, really crucial. And this is true that all of these things have to be there in order for it to be a qualified prospect. They have to be the decision maker. It must be something that will benefit them. And they have to be able to buy it. Okay? And the same thing is true no matter what you're selling. So here's the rule of rule number one. It is possible to close every qualified prospect if you can take them through these four psychological steps in order. Okay? Step number one. You have to build trust and rapport. Now, does this sound at all familiar, guys? Does this sound like your little circle of opportunity call? Okay? Trust and rapport. You see, nobody buys anything, and I don't care if it is consulting services, if it is a new hat, if it is a new car, if it's real estate, no matter what it is. If they don't like you, they don't trust you, they don't believe in what it is you're going to do, there's no way they're going to buy. So, step number one is there have to be trust and rapport. Even something as simple as a can of green beans over at the supermarket, you know? If I don't believe that the people who put the beans in the can and the people who are selling those beans are going to do it in a way that's not going to make me sick when I open them up and eat them, I'm not going to buy, okay? Trust has got to be there first. Number two, nobody buys anything that they do not need, do not want, or that will not fulfill some opportunity for them. Now, you're probably sitting there saying, gee, Cluff, that is really stupid because I have a whole closet full of things that I didn't really need, didn't really want, but I went ahead and bought them anyway. Do any of you absolutely hate fresh, raw oysters on the half shell? Hate them. Would not eat them. You absolutely detest oysters on the half shell. Well, I'll tell you what, I've got a plate here of fresh, raw oysters on the half shell. They're flown in, fresh today. They're all sitting here kind of, you know, juicy and quivering there on the shells. And we've got the sauce and everything to go with it. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to sell you this plate of oysters for $10. You wouldn't buy them for $10. Okay. How about $8? Would you buy them for $8? No. All right, I'll tell you what, I'll give you a special deal. This plate of oysters is only $6, and I'm going to throw in a second plate at no charge to go with it. Now, how about that? Would you buy that? No. Okay. Now, how come Pete won't buy the oysters? He hates them, doesn't like them. No matter what I do, he's not going to buy them. Now, see, that is a big mistake that many people make. Nobody wants it. Nobody needs it. Nobody's going to buy it. So first thing we do is cut the price, try to give them more of it. Well, if they don't want it and need it, it still doesn't make any difference. So maybe we should take a little bit different approach. Pete, you hate oysters. Is there any kind of seafood that you do like?
I love oysters.
You love oysters fried. Okay. All right. You like the fried oysters. Okay. Good. So I'll take these raw ones. We'll take them back. We'll fry them up just the way you like them and prepare them all, everything just the way you want it. And here it is. We'll give you that. Would you buy that for $10? Okay. See, there we go. Now, what was the difference? What did I do differently? I asked you a few questions. I found out you hate the raw ones, but you like the fried ones. So I found out what you really wanted. Then what did I do? I gave you something to fill that need. I gave you a product to fill the need. And then fourth, I asked you to buy, and you did. And that's called the close or the motivation to take action. Motivate to take action. It's possible to close everybody. All you have to do is make sure, number one, they're qualified. Number two, take them through the four steps in order. Build rapport, find the need, fill the need, close. Build rapport, find the need, fill the need, close. That's all selling is. That's all it is. Build rapport, find the need, fill the need, and close. The only reason people don't buy, only reason that people don't buy, is because somewhere one of these four steps has not been fulfilled. Why didn't you buy the raw oysters? Because I didn't find your need. See? Now, the big mistake that a lot of times we make in selling is that we sell backwards. What it means to sell backwards is this. We typically, and this is what many salespeople do, is they start here. Here's my raw oysters. Gee, I hope I can find somebody who needs it and that they will like me well enough that they'll go ahead and buy it. They're selling backwards. That's wrong. What you want to do is take them through these four steps in order. Now, if you do that, they'll buy every time. Now, I am not going to tell you that going backwards doesn't work, because sometimes companies do come into existence. They create a product. They find that, gee, yeah, people need this. Okay? You can also sell the same way. You can sell backwards and be successful. A lot of people do. I'm not saying you can't. All right? It's called pitching. If I'm going to make a selling career successful just by pitching, okay? And pitching means I'm just pitching my product. Here's my product. Boy, I hope you need it and like me and trust me enough that you'll buy it, okay? There are a lot of people that have had a successful career of doing that. It is easy to sell somebody what they want versus what you want to sell. And so how do you raise the closing ratio? You raise the closing ratio by discovering what their needs are and giving it to them. Does that make sense? Okay, so you all see the picture here. Okay, that's what we're trying to do. Now, how do we do this? Well, let's spend just a minute and talk about selling attitude, because attitude is a very important part of the selling process, like we said. And I'll tell you right now, based on what I've just told you, the attitude that you should have, and this attitude will give you at least a 25% increase in sales, I guarantee you, if you do nothing else other than this, is simply change your attitude, change the way you think about selling. Instead of thinking about, how can I sell this, you think about, how can I help this person get what they want through the use of my product? The more you help other people get what they want, the more you're going to get what you want, okay? I guarantee you that will give you an increase in sales just by changing that one attitude. Thinking in terms of, how do I help my client get what he wants, not what I want to sell. Okay? Now, in terms of getting motivated to do that, there are three things that you want to do. Three things that you want to do. Okay? Number one is to set goals. If you don't know where you're at and you don't know where you're going, you're never going to know how to get there. Okay? So you have to set goals and know what it is that you want to accomplish. Set specific objectives. That's the first step in getting motivated for sales. The second step in getting motivated for sales is to look, act, and think like a winner. Okay? Have a winning attitude. Everybody likes to do business with a winner. So have a winning attitude. Look like a winner, act like a winner, think like a winner. You see, and I'll tell you exactly what I mean by that is this. If you don't believe that whatever it is that you're selling is the greatest thing in the world, and that you are the greatest salesperson in the world, and this person is really going to benefit by what it is that you're selling, if you don't believe it, nobody else is going to believe it. Okay? If you don't believe it, nobody else is going to believe it. So you have to get excited. You have to get behind it and believe in it yourself. Okay? That's the second attitude. Third attitude is you have to manage your language. What do you suppose I mean when I say manage your language? When I say manage your language, what I mean is you have to manage the way that you talk to yourself. If you say, oh man, I really blew that. Oh geez, I screwed that up so bad. I don't want to go do this in a call. See, that's what you're not doing properly. Okay? So if you're going to maintain this winning attitude, you have to manage the way that you talk to yourself and the way that you feel about yourself and you know, break out of that disempowering belief cycle. Okay, final thing here as far as getting motivated for sales is you have to follow the STP rule. And it's really incredible. Really, really incredible. When I see salespeople who are not succeeding, not doing as well as they should, I can trace it back almost invariably to one of these STP rules is being, one or more of them is being broken. If they're not succeeding, they are breaking one of these STP rules. The first STP rule is this. See the people. See the people. If you look at a salesperson or a sales organization that's failing, first thing you want to look at is, are they seeing the darn people? You got to make the calls. You got to make the calls, okay? So that's the first STP rule. Now, the reason it is STP, second STP rule is to sell the people. Well, now that sounds pretty obvious, Clough. Of course we're going to sell. Well, you know, it's not always that obvious because there's a lot of what we call professional visitors in the business. What is a professional visitor? Well, a professional visitor is a person who sees the people, goes through the motions, but really what they're doing is they are visiting. Okay? They're not selling. What does it mean to sell? It means to build rapport, find the need, fill the need, and close. That's it. Build rapport, find the need, fill the need, and close. Sell the people. Number three, service the people. You've got to take care of them. Do what you say you'll do. Follow up, you know, and they'll be there with you. Fourth STP rule, stop the procrastination. Just get out there and do it. This sounds really easy, kind of hokey, but doggone it, it's true. Makes sense, huh? Okay, and the second rule then for successful selling is follow up, which we're going to obviously be implementing some follow up systems with you here. Okay, any questions about this? Does this make sense? Jeff, does this make sense to you? Okay, Ben, are you okay? Pete? All right. Let's talk about then the specific skills that are needed here. Specific selling skills that are going to help you to be more successful. Once you got your right attitude, once you're doing the STP rules and all that kind of stuff, specific selling skills that are going to make you more successful. Now, this next page is unique to the retail salesperson. Let's take a look at the sales process here in your business. What happens? People come through the door, don't they? Yes, they do. People come through the door. What is typically the first thing that you say to a person when they come through the door? What do most retail salespeople typically say to the prospect who walks through the door? Can I help you? Folks, you don't learn anything about sales training. You don't learn anything about what to teach your clients in retail other than this. Teach them this, and they'll make more money. And that is, do not open the sale with, "Hi, may I help you?" Don't do that. Teach your people not to do that. Now, why would we not want to say, "May I help you?" It's because people have been trained. Now, typically, when you walk into a store, think about yourself. You walk into the store, you walk up there, and the salesperson says, "May I help you?" What do you say? "No, I am just looking." Now, once in a while, maybe somebody's going to say, "Do you have this particular product?" Or, "I'm looking for this," or, "I want that." Now, I hope that if, in fact, they say one of those two things, you know how to help them, okay? If they say, "I want to buy this," well, then I hope you can sell it to them. See, the reason we do that is because people don't like to be sold. People do not like to be sold. People like to buy. People want to buy. They don't want to be sold. Now, what is your job as a salesperson? Your job is to help people to buy. And we help people to buy by building rapport, finding needs, filling needs, and closing. That's how we do it. If you're asking people, "May I help you?" and they're putting you off saying, "No, I am just looking," they're building a wall. Now, how in the world are you going to build any trust and rapport if they're just building the wall? You're not. What you have to do is you want to use a different opening line. A line that will build trust and rapport and encourage the customer to start talking. Because, see, what you want to do is you want to be able to start building that person-to-person relationship. And just as I taught you yesterday, that the best way to build rapport is to take a sincere interest, to ask questions and get them talking about themselves. You do the same thing here, okay? use an opening line that will open them up and get them to start talking about themselves. So rather than saying, "Hi, may I help you?" let's think of some other opening lines which you might use. This is a very powerful tool, very, very powerful concept. One effective technique in retail is called the brush by. The brush by. Now, what the brush by is the prospect walks into the store, rather than just walking right up to them and immediately jumping on them, you know, "Hi, how are you today?" and "Hi, may I help you?" or whatever. You brush by. In other words, you just walk by them. Hi, acknowledge the fact they're there. Walk right by them. Go over, do something else for a while. Let the customer feel a little bit at ease, but know that you know they're there and that have acknowledged them in some way. Give them a few seconds to do that, and then come back over and, "Hi, how you doing?" Take the pressure off. Make them feel at ease. A lot of times, no matter what you do, they're still going to say, "I'm just looking." "Hi, how are you today?" "I'm just looking." Sometimes you're going to get that, no matter what you do. Now, handle the response, "I'm just looking." Handle the response, "I'm just looking." If the person says, "I'm just looking," here's what you say. You say, "Terrific." So anytime somebody says, "I'm just looking," first word out of your mouth is "terrific." And then ask a question like this. "Terrific. What direction can I point you in?" See, we're starting to try to probe and find out what their needs are, what they're looking for. So, "Terrific. What direction can I point you in?" B, "I'm just looking." "Terrific. What are you looking for?" C, "I'm just looking." "Well, it's terrific. Have you been in our store before?" "Mm-hmm." D, "I'm just looking." "Terrific. Our store is really fun to browse in. What caught your eye?" D, "I'm just looking." "Well, that's terrific." Now, in the approach, here are some rules that you need to follow. If you're beginning to work with the customer, follow these rules. A, think of yourself as the customer's host. Think of them as though they were a guest in your home. Treat them the same way. Think of yourself as the customer's host while they're in the store. B, don't judge by appearance. Based on the way a person looks or the way they're dressed, you can't tell whether they're ready to buy or not. C, use an opening line that has nothing to do with business. D, develop a person-to-person relationship. In other words, try to relate to them on a personal basis first before you begin the business. And E, consider each prospect willing and able to buy until you determine otherwise. Okay, so make sure you follow those rules. Now, number 4, don't use cliches. Don't use cliches. And primarily the ones we're talking about, the cliches we've already discussed. Number 1 is, "May I help you?" Number 2, "Call me if you need anything." "Ask me if you have any questions. I'll be over here." Just stay away from that typical salesperson kind of an approach. Okay, that's all designed to help you do step 1, building trust and rapport. All of those things are going to help you to more quickly solidify the relationship, build the trust, build the rapport. The next thing we want to start doing then is we want to begin to identify the customer's wants and needs. We want to try to find out what is it that they truly want. This is called probing. It's the process by which you determine those wants and needs. First thing I want to stress to you is do not use the merchandise approach. What the merchandise approach is this. Jeff walks into the store, he comes up, and boy, he starts looking at this table, and he's checking it all out, and so I walk up to him as a salesperson, and I start selling him this table. "Boy, that's a really nice table, and boy, it does this and that." Go on for 10 minutes about the benefits of this table, and Jeff says, "Yeah, but I came in here to buy a new dishwasher." And a lot of times that'll happen. Just because somebody is exhibiting an interest in something does not mean that that's what they really want or need. So you still have to probe and find out. So I would then have to say, "Oh, were you looking for a new table?" "No, actually, I was looking for a dishwasher." "Okay, well, that just saved me 10 minutes worth of time." So don't use the merchandise approach. Now, in probing, What we want to do is ask questions. Ask those questions that are going to get the customer to open up and tell us what it is that they're really looking for. Now, those probing questions are the W questions. Who, what, where, when, how, and why. Filling the dominant buying motive. Now, the dominant buying motive, that's the need. That's what we found. That's what they want. That's why they're looking. That's why they want to move to a new apartment. That's why they want to buy the new car. That's why they want the new dishwasher. Okay? That's what you've identified by going through the who, what, when, where, how, and why questions. In making the presentation, in filling the dominant buying motive, first rule here is to act enthusiastic and believe in your product, which you've already discussed. Now, I want to give you some quick little rules of things that you can do here that's going to help enhance people's belief in you and belief in your product and make them feel comfortable and everything with you as you are making the presentation. This will help you to act enthusiastically. Number one, smile. Number two, maintain a relaxed, open stance. Okay? In other words, if you're in a relaxed, open stance, people are going to feel more comfortable with you. Number three, lean slightly towards the customer. Number four, maintain eye contact. Number five, occasionally touch the client. Careful how you do this. Okay, know their name and use their name. But don't use it to excess. So a lot of times you can tell a real phony sales pitch. Well, Ben, this is really a great product, Ben. And Ben, I think you'd really like to have this, Ben. Okay, so don't use that to excess. Number seven, subtly mirror the customer's behavior. In other words, if the customer is all exuberant and ecstatic and enthusiastic, you want to be the same way. You don't want to come across as really laid back and low key. If, on the other hand, the customer is really kind of laid back and very low key, you don't want to come on real strong. So mirror their behavior so that you're in tune and in touch with them. Okay, number eight, use humor when appropriate. Okay, now, when you are presenting the product, now, this is really important. I'm going to teach you a little sales track. Now, what I mean by a sales track is they should do this the same way every single time. When you're presenting whatever it is that you sell, you want to present it in this way. F-A-B-B-T-D. F-A-B-B-T-D. That is the sales track that I want you to use. This is a very, sometimes a difficult concept for many salespeople to master. But once they do, it's phenomenal. What F-A-B-B-T-D is this, okay? Let's say that we are selling Lazy Boy recliners. We are presenting the Lazy Boy recliner to the customer. We want to tell them about the Lazy Boy recliner. What is it we're going to tell them about the Lazy Boy recliner? We're going to tell them features or facts, okay? Features or facts. For example, this Lazy Boy recliner has steel-reinforced springs. That's a feature. That's a fact about the product, okay? The tendency now for most salespeople, most unsuccessful salespeople, is to do this. They will say, Jeff, you need to buy this Lazy Boy recliner because, man, doggone it, it's got steel-reinforced springs. What do you think of that? Jeff saying, so what? What does that mean? Now, that's what most salespeople do. They will go to here and stop. Buy this Lazy Boy recliner. It's got steel-reinforced springs, and it comes in blue or red. What you want to do is go beyond that. Feature, advantage. Jeff, you know, this Lazy Boy recliner has steel-reinforced springs. That makes them four times stronger than any other spring on the market. That's an advantage. You tell why is that particular feature or fact better than something else. Then you give them the benefit of that. The benefit, think about the benefit in terms of this. W-I-I-F-M. What's in it for me? The only reason people buy stuff is because they're hoping that their life is going to somehow be better off. In fact, there are two reasons that people buy things. Only two. Did you know that? Hope of gain, hope that their life is going to be better off if they buy it. In other words, if I buy this chair, my life is going to be better off because I'll enjoy sitting in this chair and watching football every Sunday. That's one reason. Another reason that people buy stuff is fear of loss. Now, this is a very, very important concept. Hope of gain or fear of loss. Two reasons that people buy stuff. In fact, 80% of the stuff we buy because of fear of loss. It's a far more powerful motivator than hope of gain. We buy out of fear of loss more than anything. And it is the most powerful motivator, okay? Why would I buy the Lazy Boy recliner that has steel-reinforced springs, four times stronger than any other spring on the market? Because this chair is not going to break down for 20 years, and I'm not going to have to worry about buying another one for a long time. See? Fear of loss. I'm afraid that if I don't buy this chair, I'm going to have to be buying another one pretty soon. And I don't want to do that. Cost more money. Big hassle. Okay? Remember that. Fear of loss is a far more powerful motivator. So anytime you can tie this benefit back to the fear of loss, the more powerful it's going to be. You know, Jeff, you really need to buy this Dodge Caravan for two reasons. Number one, you have a young, growing family. And if you don't, you're going to outgrow it pretty soon. You're going to outgrow that other vehicle. The Dodge Caravan lasts you for long time. Family grows up, you'll be just fine.
High-rated
safety. You're not going to have to worry about this thing being safe in an accident. It's safe. Safest vehicle in its class. The bridge. Feature advantage bridge benefit. Now, what the bridge is just this. Lazy Boy recliner has steel-reinforced springs. They're four times stronger than any other chair on the market. What that means to you is, you're not ever going to have to worry about this chair breaking down. It's going to last 20 years. You're not going to have to go out and buy another one. Okay? So the bridge is what that means to you. And you always want to use that bridge because that's what ties it all together. What that means to is, and then you state the benefit. And then you tie it down. Tie it down. Did you know that the Dodge Caravan has the highest rated safety features of any vehicle in its class, meaning that it is probably the safest van that you can buy? What that means to you is you're not going to have to worry about your family getting injured if you ever have a collision. That's what you want, isn't it? See how that works? This Lazy Boy recliner has steel-reinforced springs. They're four times stronger than any other spring on the market. Now, what that means to you is that this chair is going to last for a long, long time. You're not going to have to worry about buying another chair for at least the next 20 years. That's what you want, isn't it? The marketing system works at growing your business three ways. Now, the advantage of that is that we are going to grow your business by not only getting more prospects and improving closing ratio and improving customer worth, and that's going to give you exponential growth. Now, what that means to you is that your business is going to grow faster and you're going to make more money. That's what you want, isn't it? The marketing system leverages your hidden marketing assets. That means that we take what you are now doing and leverage it, optimize it, do a better job with what you're now doing, get more bang for the buck. What that means to you is you can get sustained growth without having to make a lot of major changes in your business or invest a lot of money. That's what you want, isn't it? You all get that? Okay. Powerful, powerful tools. Now, in giving the features, the advantages, and the benefits, you want to give evidence to back it up, okay, to prove that what you're saying is true. Now, if I say that, hey, you buy the Dodge Caravan because it has the highest safety record there is, you might challenge me and say, well, I don't believe that. I want to see that. How can you prove that? Okay. Well, there's seven forms of evidence. And we call this the defeats method, because this seven forms of evidence will defeat most objections. Okay? Well, the seven forms of evidence are, number one, D stands for demonstrate. Demonstrate. Okay? I remember one time going into a Saturn dealership, and they were saying their Saturns are really safe and all that, and they had a little demonstration there where they had, I guess this is kind of an exhibit as well, and that's by the way, is E, is exhibit. But they had a little cutaway, and they had the car kind of sliced, the side of the car sliced in half, so you could see, you know, all the frame and the safety features and all that were inside the frame of the car. And so they were demonstrating that their vehicle was safe by having a little exhibit set up. I was in Bemidji, Minnesota, working with an appliance guy, sold Maytag washers. Maytag washers are supposed to last for a long time. I mean, their main feature is quality, okay? They're going to last forever and ever. Well, he had a little demonstration set up. He had a Maytag washer hooked up in the window of his store, and it was set up so that it would just run continually, nonstop. Load after load after load, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Never stopped running. So it was really an exciting thing, because he had this set up right in the window of his store. This is kind of a small town, probably about the size of Milford. And had this set up in the window, and then people would come in, and they would guess the exact day and time when the washer was going to break down. See? And then whoever came closest to guessing the correct time would win a new Maytag washer and dryer. See? So anyway, he had this exhibit set up there, and it ran, it was something like, I don't know, a year and a half. Nonstop, like I say, load after load, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. It was like, you know, like 56 years or something like that before it would, you know, break down. And so it really did a good job in demonstrating, you know, how effectively and how quality these things were and how long they were going to last. Okay, so demonstrate or exhibit. F stands for facts. And you can give the facts that, yes, you know, I don't know what the facts are about the caravan being the most safe vehicle, but maybe it's got the best frame or whatever, I don't know. E stands for example. Give examples of how other people have used it. Yes, you know, Jeff, we had a family just the other day that got in a head-on collision in Logan Canyon with this Dodge Caravan. Not a scratch. Not a scratch. Now, see, that's why you want to get this, okay? Examples of others. A stands for an analogy. T stands for testimonial. A testimonial is a very effective type of evidence, especially in a situation where credibility is at question. If credibility is an issue, people don't necessarily believe what you're telling them, okay? Having a third-party testimonial can be very effective. S stands for statistics. So those are the evidence that you can use to back up the facts that you claim when you're going through the feature, advantage, bridge, benefit, tie-downs, okay? And, of course, the tie-downs you use, that's what you want, isn't it? Isn't it true that? Don't you agree that? And so on. Always reaffirm the dominant buying motive. When you're presenting the product, your dominant buying motive in buying the caravan was safety, and you wanted to have more space. And so I'd constantly be reaffirming that. If that was the dominant buying motive, those are the things I want to focus on. I wouldn't be focusing on, oh man, this van, this is the fastest van there is. You don't care about that. You care about this, you know, the other things. All right. Number five is paint word pictures of them enjoying their purchase. Okay, motivating them to take action, closing the sale. Now, I'll tell you, my opinion is that, you know, a lot of sales trainers pay a lot of lip service to closing. And, you know, there's some big magical, mystical secret of closing the sale, and you need to have some kind of all these little tricks and techniques and little tools and all these things that you do. I don't believe that, okay? I believe that the sale will close almost automatically, just like selling you the fried oysters. Man, you're hungry, you love fried oysters, here they are, there's no reason why you wouldn't buy them. If you've done the job right, there's really not going to be any real reason why they're not going to buy. But you do have to close. You have to ask for the sale. Okay? Just like we said, you have to ask for the check. Same thing. You have to ask for the sale. Now, here are some different ways in which you can ask for the sale. Number one, simply ask a closing question. Should we go ahead and get started? Is there any real reason you wouldn't want to go ahead and buy it right now? Should we go ahead and write it up? Okay? Just ask a closing question, the answer to which will be either, you know, yes or no. Yes, I will buy, or no, I won't. And then they'll typically give you an objection, which we'll talk about here in a minute. Okay, number two is the assumptive close. Richard, we can do the focus group with you and your staff on either Wednesday or Thursday. And then I use the alternative choice, which would work better for you. So I just assumed that he was going to buy, then gave him an alternative choice as to what times we should do it. The assumptive close is simply just assuming that they're going to buy, and you just go ahead and start working it up. Just go ahead and start putting it together. If they don't stop you, they've bought. See? Four is the minor point close. Now, what the minor point close is maybe there's some minor objection or some minor question or problem that if you can work it out, they're going to go ahead and buy it. So if I could get you that new Dodge Caravan in blue with the gold trim, can we go ahead and work it out? The instruction close is essentially just where you instruct them to do something. And by so doing, they have bought. Here, take this over to the cashier and she'll ring it up for you.
Okay.
They take it over. Once you ask for the sale, shut up. Shut up. Don't say another word. Should we go ahead and work it out? You see, once you've asked for the sale, you've now put the ball in their court. They have to do something with it. It's easier to say yes than it is to say no. And that silence oftentimes creates a little intensity, a little positive pressure. Use it to your advantage. After you have asked for the sale, after you've asked them to buy, the only time that you should ever speak is if they do one of three things. And those three things are, number one, they say yes. Number two, they say no and give you an objection. Or three, they ask you a question. That's the only time you should speak, is if they do one of those three things. So, what do we do? If they say yes, well, good. Go ahead, work it out, do whatever you have to. Don't let anything get in the way. All right? If they ask you a question, then you have to answer. If they give you an objection, then you're going to have to deal with it. Now, objections come in a number of different types. There are only two real objections. Everything else is what we call a smokescreen. Let me give you the two real objections first. The first real objection is, I don't need it. I don't need it. Now, that is a legitimate objection. And what it means is that you have, as a salesperson, failed back in step number two in isolating the need, finding the dominant buying motive. You come into the car dealership and I start selling the Pontiac Firebird. You may want it, but you don't need it. You're not going to buy it because it does not meet your needs of safety and family and all that stuff. So that is a legitimate objection. There are only two legitimate objections, by the way, okay, assuming we're dealing with a qualified prospect. The second legitimate objection is it won't work. It won't work. And that stems back again to the fact that you've not really isolated exactly what they need and you have not filled their need. Sure, you need new transportation because you wrecked your old vehicle, but the Pontiac Firebird is not going to work for me. Or, yeah, I want to grow my business, but I really don't believe that the plan that you've put together here is going to work. It's not going to do anything for me. Which means that you failed then back in step number three, putting together a plan or a product that will fulfill his needs. Now, these are the only two legitimate objections. Everything else is a smokescreen. If you get these legitimate objections, and oftentimes the smokescreen simply masks one of the legitimate objections, But if you get one of these legitimate objections, it means that you need to go back to that point in the selling process, okay? If the legitimate objection is, I don't need it, means you haven't isolated their need. You got to go back to the probing stage, the who, what, when, where, how, and why. If the objection is it won't work, then it means that you've got to go back and recreate another, another idea, another plan, another product, or find something else that will meet those needs. There's another kind of objection, which is a little bit unique, and it is a little bit legitimate, okay? And it's called a condition. And what that means is that, yeah, they want to buy. They're sold. They'd like to buy it. They're going to buy it. But there's something getting in the way. Yeah, I'm going to buy the new Dodge Caravan. That's the one I want. Price is great. That's exactly what I want. And as soon as I get my insurance settlement on my other vehicle, I'll come down and buy it. So there's no way I can buy it today. See, the condition here is I got to get the insurance money. All right? Now, that's a legitimate thing. It's not really an objection. It's not really an objection, but it's a condition that is hampering the close of the sale. Typically, there's not much you can do about the conditions. Okay? You have to simply work with them. Another condition that we see happening quite a lot is that people like to feel as though they have bought rather than that they have been sold. And so a lot of times what you'll see happening is a guy, he wants to do it, he's going to do it, he's all set, but he's just not going to commit to it today. And the reason why is because he does not want to appear to have been sold. What he wants to do is he wants to appear as though he buys. Now, I have seen this happen happens almost every day. Time after time after time after time. And I'll just tell you this because it's very appropriate. It's called the 24-hour rule. 24-hour rule. And what the 24-hour rule is this. I say, well, gee, Pete, I really like what you've shown me here. And I really think we want to do it. Let me call you tomorrow. Now, the 24-hour rule is they say just that, okay? That they give you a time when they are going to call you back sometime within the next 24 hours. What that means is that they have bought, but they just want to appear as though they buy, not that they've been sold, okay? And in 95% of the cases where that happens, they will call you back within 24 hours and they will buy. I can't even remember the last time that has failed. Now, it would be different if they said this. Well, Ben, looks good. I think we want to do it. I'll tell you what, I'll call you next week. It's dead. It'll never happen. Never, never happen. It's the time frame. Okay? That's what will clue you in, is the time frame. If they give you a time when they're going to let you know, and it's within 24 hours, they've bought. If it's anything more than 24 hours, deal's dead. Guarantee you, it is dead. It will never happen. There's an objection there that you've got to deal with. That's an important thing for you to learn, because the 24-hour rule comes up a lot. And what you want to be on the lookout for is if you get the 24-hour rule, you don't want to start hammering them, because all it's going to do is make them mad. It's going to irritate them, and they might get pissed off and not buy. See? Because they've already bought. They just want to look like they've bought, not that they've been sold. So whenever I get the 24-hour rule, I say, great, fine, talk to you tomorrow. All right, now, other objections that you get here are the stall or the put-off. Well, I'll let you know. I can't do it this week, but let's get together next week. Okay. Can't do it now, but first of the month. Okay? They don't want to tell you no. They just want to string you along. And the reason why they do that is because people don't like to say no. It's hard for them to say no. They'd rather put you off and hope that you forget about it rather than tell you no. And they'll keep stringing you along forever like that. Okay? And it's not a real objection. It's a smokescreen. And these are all smokescreen objections. The other type of objection is... there could be any number of these. They are excuses. My wife is sick right now, so I can't do it. Okay? Or whatever it might be, okay? There's any number of excuses. And the last kind of objection is what I call the half-baked. Okay? It just really has no bearing on what it is that you're doing. And those are all, what the most common stall or put-off that you get is, I have to think about it. Okay? Think about it. All of these kinds of objections here are really, in most cases, unless the guy is just a moron or something here, they're masking the real reason. They're typically using one of these stalls, excuses, or half-baked objections to mask the real reason. And so what you have to try to do is you have to try to smoke it out, overcome the objection. Now, I want to tell you something here as far as when you should handle objections. Typically, you're going to get objections throughout the selling process. Ostensibly, you're going to get them at any point in the process. What you want to try to do, if you get objections at any point in the selling process prior to having asked them to buy, is you want to just steer around it. The reason why is because many times the objections will automatically work themselves out as you take them through the process, building rapport, finding the need, filling the need, and closing. So here's what you do. I'm going to give you a four-step process here for overcoming objections and dealing with it. The first step is to smile. In other words, maintain your rapport, maintain your poise. Don't let it throw you, okay? Second thing is call them by name. The third thing is to agree with them, okay? Agree with the way that they feel. So you get the objection early on is, he's worried about your credibility, not sure you can pull it off or whatever. So you say, well, Jeff, I can certainly appreciate that because I know this is going to be a big project, and you want to make sure that I can do the job for you, and I can certainly appreciate the way you feel about that. As we go through this, I'm sure you'll be able to see why that's not going to be a worry for you. So rather than trying to answer and say, well, what do you mean you don't think I can do it? Did you know I did this, and this, and I'm great, da da da? Rather than hitting the thing head on, creating a confrontational environment, you want to steer around it and maintain a partnering relationship. So if I agree with the way he feels about the objection, then I'm on the same side. Okay? We're together on this thing. So at any point in the selling process, prior to having asked them to buy, you just go to this point here. Smile, call them by name, agree with the way they feel, and then just simply go on. Just bypass it. He said, well, I think your services cost too much. Well, Jeff, I can certainly appreciate that because I know it is a big investment to do the job right. Now, let's take a look at this over here, okay? And you steer around it. Now, the reason you do that, again, is because most of the objections, if you're following the process, most of the objections are going to be eliminated automatically, simply by building rapport, finding the need, filling the need, and closing, okay? Now, if you get the objection, after you've closed, after you've asked them to buy, and you get, a smoke screen, oh, I have to think about it, then you want to use the ready method. And what you're trying to do here, you want to isolate the objection and be able to overcome it, okay? Now, R stands for reverse it, and simply spell it back to them. So, Jeff, so you have to think about it for a while? And oftentimes, by reversing it back to them, and putting it back on their lap, they're going to tell you what is really getting in the way. Because, see, we can't deal with the I have to think about it smokescreen objection. We can only deal with the real, legitimate objection to find out what is really getting in the way. Either he doesn't need it or he doesn't think it'll work. We have to find out. E stands for explain it. Well, I don't think I'll buy the caravan because I don't think it's as safe as you say. Well, Jeff, I can appreciate the way you feel because I know you want a really safe vehicle. Let me explain to you why it's so safe. Okay, and explain it to him again. A stands for admit it. Well, I don't think I'm going to buy the Dodge Caravan because, I heard that sometimes when you get in a rear-end collision, the seats pop out. Well, Jeff, I can appreciate the way you feel, because that was a problem. That did happen in the past. I just admitted it. Yeah, it's true. It did happen. So let's see what they've done to, let me see what they've done to fix that. So you just admit it. Yes, it is true. D stands for deny it. Well, I don't think I'm going to buy the Dodge Caravan because I heard that it was the most unsafe van on the road. Well, Jeff, I can appreciate the way you feel, because I know that you want a safe vehicle, but that's just not true. In fact, it's one of the safest vehicles, and here, let me show you why. And then you go back to your evidence, okay? Back to your seven forms of evidence. Why stands for ask why. Why do you need to think about it? What is it that you need to think about? So what you have to do then in dealing with and overcoming these objections is to find out what's really getting in the way and try to reduce it back down to one of the legitimate reasons, okay? Legitimate reason being either I don't need it or I don't think it's going to work, which will then give you the tools that you need in which to overcome it. Just go back to that point in the selling process. If I can, would you? In other words, if I can prove to you that the Dodge Caravan is the safest van on the road, would you go ahead and buy it? If I can prove to you that the back seat's not going to fly out when you get hit from the rear end, would you go ahead and buy it? If I can demonstrate to you that you could achieve exponential growth, can we go ahead and work it out? Learning to upsell. The key to upselling is packaging. Putting package together, products, services, selling it as a group, getting them to buy more. Just like we have seen McDonald's and fast food restaurants have packaged their sandwiches and drinks and fries to create the value meal. There's several things you should do here. Number one, create complementary products, but complementary products and services together. In other words, the guy comes into the clothing store and buys the new sports jacket. Well, show him the shirts, the ties, the slacks, the shoes, the socks, and everything else that would go along with that. Okay? Number two, always assume that they are going to buy the package, buy more. Okay, I went into a store here in Salt Lake. I wanted to buy some of those little rubber things for my shoes, it's about a $4.50 purchase. Walked out $675 later. I'm going to buy the little toe rubbers, and the guy says, "Boy, we got some nice sports jackets in. Let me just try this on you." He puts it. I got to buy this, the jacket and a couple of pairs of pants and shirts and new tie and the whole deal. Okay. So just assume the customer is going to buy. Until they say no, just keep building it up. Okay. Number three. Use this concept. Let me show you what a lot of other people use this with, or wear this with, or buy with this. Okay? Show what other people have done. Package it the way other people have bought it. Show that that this is what everybody else is doing. Let me show you what a lot of other people have bought to go with this. Okay, number four, just ask the question, should we add the fill in the blank. Should we add the shirt? Should we add the tie? Should we add the new shoes? Number five, use this phrase. Go ahead and try this on with your new jacket, okay? And that's how this guy sold me. He says, "Here, go ahead and try this new jacket on." Oh, well, okay. Next page, when and where to upsell. When you upsell, you can upsell after the initial purchase decision. So I go in, I make the decision, I'm going to buy the new toe rubbers, and he starts upselling me all the other stuff. When and where you can upsell, working the floor, putting things in your hand, building their pile. That's with the guy at the clothing store. He just kept building my pile. Just put more stuff in there, okay? At the register, okay? Well, you guys heard of Bunsmaster Bakeries? Yeah, they were a client of mine nationally in Canada a couple years ago. I did a lot of training with all their dealer groups all across Canada. And one of the things that they were doing, you've probably seen the promotion they do or used to do about every year. They'd get this bag, and they'd send it out with the newspaper and print it on the bag, which they bring this bag into Bunsmaster, and all the buns you can stuff into the bag you get for 99 cents. You remember that promotion? Very, very effective promotion on bringing traffic into the bakery, okay? But what was happening is that people would come in with the bag, and the bag is designed to hold about maybe half a dozen buns at the most. People would come in, and they'd mash them in. they'd put 15, 20 buns in the bag. They didn't care if they were all mashed down, right? So even though it was bringing a lot of people in, people would come in, they'd mash 15 buns into the bag, they'd pay 99 cents, walk out, Bunsmaster was losing money. See, and they were thinking about discontinuing the promotion. Well, I looked at that and I said, what is the hidden marketing asset here? You tell me, what is the hidden asset?
If you are interested in the remaining training, please contact the person who sent you this tape.